Welcome to Foursquare Leader Conversations. In the second episode of this limited series, Ted Vail catches up with Randy Remington in Carlsbad, California, during Foursquare Leader Conferences to talk about what it's like to go from being a local pastor to president of the Foursquare Church. Ted Vail is the Senior Vice President of Global Operations for the Foursquare Church. Randy Remington has served in the role of president since 2020. Now, let's get into this second episode of Foursquare Leader Conversations. Take it away, Ted and Randy.
When you pray for pastors, I mean, like, you pray for every pastor in Foursquare, and you pray for leaders by name. What does that look like? Like, how long do you pray for every pastor?
Yeah. I feel like it's probably at the least one of the things I can do to serve our pastors and leaders. When Samuel said, far be it from me that I would sin against God by not praying for you. But for me, I differentiate prayer in kind of two ways. I see my prayer closet, that's my communion, you know, that's my own abiding life in Jesus, my own, what you do in private will be shouted in public, you know, so that's my own sustained life in Jesus in prayer, communion. But then there's that intercessory aspect of prayer that I realize I have to have a systemic or a systematic way that I approach that. Because I can't be haphazard in it, or I won't be comprehensive in it. And so I can't say at this point I pray for every credentialed minister by name. Right now I'm praying for every senior pastor by name, and then I'm praying for our credentialed lists in bulks. But I have a rhythm of prayer, of intercession, of how I pray over our churches and leaders, pastors. And so I have the list of all the churches and the pastors. And then every Thursday morning, I pray. I take a section of my prayer time, and I just really go through. And oftentimes the Holy Spirit will have me stop over a certain name. And I have to bundle so many names per Thursday. So over the course of a given year, I've hopefully prayed by everyone by name at least twice. Oftentimes the Holy Spirit will stop and just spotlight a name, and I'll just start praying in the Spirit over them. And oftentimes it'll result in a text of encouragement, or like, hey, here's what I prayed for you today. I feel like the Lord showed me this. It's not even a labor of love. It doesn't even feel like it requires, it's not sacrificial. It's a joyful thing to get to do.
You know, something else, you just reminded me of something we've talked about is sometimes we hear people, even our own pastors are having a hard time hearing from the Lord. But you're also saying like, hey, when I'm praying and I'm praying in the Spirit, sometimes I just hear from the Lord, or I sense something from the Lord, and then you just like zero in on it. Is mm-hmm. that kind of something that happens?
Yeah. You know, I think foundationally, I think we lead by listening. You know, the one who hears my voice and does it is like the one who builds his house on the rock. And I think for us as leaders, there's those things that we learn, those things that we even parrot, but there's those things that we say by the Spirit. When Jesus said to Peter, flesh and blood didn't reveal this to you, my Father in heaven showed you that. That sometimes when we speak, it's like, those words that we're speaking, they resonate differently, they land differently, because they have a thus saith the Lord kind of prophetic dimension to it. And I think we've got to be people who are saying something because we're hearing something. And I don't think that God is silent. We have a faith that is not aesthetic. We have a faith that's not rooted in visual aspects per se. Unlike the Greco-Roman gods that, you know, there was, you know, icons and images and sculptures and temples. Those are forbidden in our journey of life in God. But we have a God who speaks. Mm. And so for us, our quest, our goal is to cultivate a listening ear. Because even, you know, the book of Revelation, let him who has an ear to hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. And so when Jesus said to Peter, you're going to leave me? And he's like, where else will I go? Who else has the words of life? And so I think at the end of the day, a word from the Lord has an impact that no other word can have. In a simple word from the Lord, it can accomplish what 10 sermons might not be able to accomplish. So I think that skill, acquiring a listening ear, attuning your ear to hear how we hear that through the Word, by the Spirit, in community, is essential for the way that we lead, especially in these days.
Did you ever, you're a senior pastor for a long time, decades. Did you ever
Do I look it? Do I look like I've been pastoring for 30 years?
Do you ever have a time when you had your, kind of like you had your sermon calendar, you had your way you're going, but then you felt like you heard from the Lord? Did you ever just like pull a crazy Ivan? Did you ever just go, I'm going this way? And then all of a sudden during the week maybe of where you went, nope, I think I've heard from the Lord. I need to change it up. I got to go this other direction.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it might have even seemed undisciplined in the fact how frequently I did that. You know, it was harder for me to plan out front, even though I really worked at it. But I kind of had to go where I sensed the life was in the message. And even sometimes in preparation for whatever that text was or what I thought the direction was going to be, it ended up going a different way. I always felt the freedom to just punt. You know, like I wasn't going to just grind because we had put it out there to the team that this is the direction we were going to go. If we felt like that's not where the life was and the Spirit was leading in a different direction, I felt no qualms about just pivoting and going to where the life was.
How old were you? So I was thinking about when you started pastoring your first church, you and Sandy started when you were in your 20s. Mm-hmm. And you took a church, I think a lot of people are in that fine line between, is it a church plant? Is it a restart? It's like a core group, but it's not very big. And you take that core group and you go with a small group. How old were you when you did that?
27. Yeah.
You're 27. And what did being a pastor look like? For the first year, what did it look like?
We wanted to be missionaries. That's actually why I went back to Life to finish, because I wanted to be a Foursquare missionary. My wife had already graduated from Life. But the director of missions at the time didn't think we were missionary material. So it's like, before we send you, we want you to go prove yourself as a senior pastor. Go pastor for a couple of years, which actually I appreciate now, because it wasn't like, well, you can't cut it here, let's send you overseas. I think it really raised the bar that he was being selective, and I'm grateful for it. So we thought we would plant a church in the Midwest. We didn't feel like ultimately we felt confirmation in that. So we just started calling the district we came from, the Northwest District, and just said, hey, are there any openings? And really, the only opening that we were offered was a divisional superintendent in Everett, Washington, Tom Ferguson, said, hey, we have an opening. We have about 30 people that have just started as a little church, started as a Bible study, a 77-year-old man, a retired pastor. And they want to be a Foursquare church. Mm. And if you want to go there, you can go. But there's no money and don't ask for any. So we were really grateful for it. We assumed we were going to have to go get a job. We went to this small town about 45 minutes north of Seattle. And we're grateful for the opportunity. And there's about 30 people meeting in a cafeteria of a local high school, and literally we showed up. Nobody went and installed us, or we just kind of like showed up on that Sunday and said, hey, did Tom call anybody here? Because we're your pastor. And so it was a gracious group of people that embraced us. There were some challenges early on, but we just wrapped our hearts around a people and a place and thought, well, we're going to give ourselves here as long as the Lord would let us. And 2 years later, we went back, said, we're ready to go to the mission field, and they still weren't ready for us to go to the mission field. And here we are all these years later.
So, I was thinking about, because then you went to an assignment a larger church, and then ultimately went to Beaverton. Right now, sometimes people feel like, you know, is there a spot for me in a pastorate? I'm younger. Is there a spot for me as a young leader? There used to be, you know, you were a young leader. Or is there a spot for me as an older leader? Like, I'm too old for what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. Or I'm too young, or I'm this or this. I was just thinking, what's your heart for the pastor? It's just not easy to pastor today. I don't know. What's your thought for pastors right now?
Yeah.
Of any age.
Yeah, I think we have to have a healthy theology of pastoral ministry. What does it mean to be called to be a shepherd? We live in a very high-tech, Instagrammable world, and it's easy to envision ministry in light of a platform. The curation of an image, the presentation of a brand. But at the end of the day, it's incarnational. It's presence. It's people who have been called by Jesus, and the master of the house says to the cup's going to go here, and you go to where he calls you, and you lay down your life for a people to feed, to protect, to watch over, to equip, to mend, to heal, to lead. Those things are sometimes diminished as values, but it's a privilege to serve. Peter said it like this: be faithful shepherds to the flock of God. That I always remind myself, these are God's sheep. These are the sheep of his pasture. These aren't my sheep. These aren't a means to an end of my own advancement or promotion. And so for whatever reason, we were asked to go to a large church when we were just turning 30. I don't know why they took a risk on us, or we weren't looking for a new assignment, but we wanted to serve, and our family asked us to serve in this way, and so we prayed about it, and we went. That's where you and I met. That's where we started our friendship almost 28, well, over 30 years ago now.
Yeah.
So,
you know, one thing I was noticing is, when I was just reflecting on that too, is, I've heard it differently. I heard, like, you know, somebody will say, you know, you should always have a Paul, you should always have a Barnabas, and you should always have a Timothy. Somebody that's mentoring you, crazy friends around you, and somebody that you're mentoring. But if I looked at it that way, I would also go, you've always had that. You've always, even though sometimes pastoring can feel like a lonely thing, you've always had a big list of people around your life that you could always lean on and call. Like, I was thinking of Dick Scott. Mm-hmm. And then friends that are parts of different stages of your life where mm-hmm. you just go, hey, I'm talking to this friend or this friend. I don't know if you just had any other just thoughts on that, of just reflections that you've always had people around your life, sometimes that aren't with you in the assignment that you're at, though, mm-hmm. that are a little bit further away from it that you could call.
Yeah, the constellation of relationships that you have really are the secret sauce of ministry. I think they're one of the means by which you have a sustainable life in ministry. As a younger pastor in particular, I took the initiative. I didn't wait for my phone to ring. You know, I literally sought out. And now I realize I was probably just annoying. But I really did reach out. You referenced Dick Scott, who became a trusted, loved, lifelong mentor to my wife and I. But our first 3 years of pastoring, he had the gift of time, and he wasn't married in that season of his life. And so I would call him every single week, and we would talk for 3-4 hours a week. And I would just process every council meeting. We would go through my sermons. We would, any challenges I was facing, his ability to listen and then ask good questions and then even correct me at times, even, you know, mock me, you know, like, you're going to do that, but you're a fool. Challenge what I've heard God say. I mean, it was really a vital role that he played in my life. But I had, we had Alois Clarno, who was a career missionary with Foursquare, as well as served in other major significant areas. A single woman who served Jesus her whole life in ministry. never married, and she was a mentor to my wife and I in our marriage. She was a voice who spoke into our lives, and we welcomed that. We made room for that. Then I have all the friends, our peers, people who are kind of in the same season of life, same kind of came up in youth ministry together, doing camps together, pastoring together. And those are irreplaceable. Those are indispensable. The affinity groups that we got to be a part of and how we encouraged each other when we were struggling or discouraged. And then the intentionality of enfranchising the next generation, like just, hey, whatever I have, I want to be a Dick Scott in somebody's life. You know, I don't claim to be at that level of, you know, accomplishment in ministry, but at the same time, I'm going to make room at my table. And space, time available for others that I can pour into, encourage in the way that I've received.
You did that, especially in your last pastoral assignment. You really did create a big space and a big table for intentional mentoring of young leaders. Mm-hmm. You had like a whole group, didn't you?
Yeah, our staff was, it was a larger staff, which, you know, we had the luxury then of using the time during the week for it, but we would take our younger leaders under the age of, in that time and season was under the age of 35, which was a cluster of leaders we had on team. And then we call it pastor camp. And we would just meet for 2 hours on Thursday mornings. And I usually would bring some thing about ministry. Sometimes it was an email I'd receive. Sometimes it was what I felt like God was saying. Sometimes it was a ministry skill or experience, and just gave lots of room for interaction and mutuality and learning together. But it was really making, just prioritizing time and availability. Like, this was a good use of my time. Mm. Yeah.
So I remember one time we were in a staff meeting, and the women's ministry had a presentation. If you remember this. The women's ministry had a presentation. You remember this? And so they're presenting, and I'm on, I don't even remember because iPads didn't exist. So I'm on whatever Palm Pilot or piece of paper, or I'm doing something. And then afterwards, and the women did their presentation. And then afterwards, you lean over and you graciously, but you just said, you just missed it. And then you said, by listening to their presentation and validating what they just said, that they've got gas in their tank for the next year, for the next 6 months. But because you missed it, you just missed all of their vision and everything they had to say. Do you remember this?
I don't. I don't.
So, but that's about as mean. Doesn't matter.
That's about as mean as I could get right there. That's about as.
I just remember it because I never forgot it because I was like so corrected because I was like, "You're totally right." I mean, I was trying to multitask and do what was important to me, and I just totally missed because it was like I got my ministry and they got theirs, and you're the senior pastor, mm-hmm. so your job's like to listen to everybody. But I was like, I got my thing. And it was like a moment I never forgot because it was like, I'm a part of a team. I got to listen to everybody. And it was like this pastor moment where, and I never forgot it because, it was like, I did miss it by not listening to them. I can't be on the team with them. So here's another thought I was just wondering about is, it is not easy to be a pastor today. I mean, it seems like, who couldn't say it's, you know, it's always been difficult, mm-hmm. but what do you say to a pastor, anybody in pastoral ministry that just says, it's so hard, sometimes I just feel like hanging it up and turning it in? What do you say to somebody right now? Because obviously you've done it a long time, and even right now, a lot of what you do in this role as the president, it's not really presidential a lot of times, it's pastoring. You're still, more than anything, you're pastoring. Mm-hmm. What do you say to somebody who wants to hang it up?
You know, not to be one who lacks empathy or to be inconsiderate of anybody that finds themselves in a situation like that, but part of me also wants to say, you know who else has a really hard time right now? First responders, elementary school teachers, There's a challenge right now to lead in any context. There's a low-grade chronic lack of trust right now in leaders, anybody who serves in any capacity. So it's just hard. It's just hard generally. But at the same time, I'm kind of energized by the fact that like we took the phrase where sin abounds, grace all the more abounds. So wherever there's darkness, wherever there's challenges, there's a greater opportunity for just manifestations of grace and ability. And so I would encourage a pastor to lean into their life in Jesus, because you've got an unending, limitless reservoir of life and resource to draw from that is sufficient to the moment and that is inexhaustible. But you can't give what you don't have. And so we all know about pacing and kind of living wise with them. But the bottom line, though, is it's when we abide, it produces something, you know. So our connection to Jesus results in a production. And we live in a world that says if you really produce, it might bring you into a connection somewhere. You know, someone might see you if you produce enough. And we're saying we live in a world where Jesus first calls us to himself, to abide in him. And out of that, you know, I've been married for 35 years. And I can tell you, the fruit of our life together resides in those moments of connection that we have together as a husband and a wife. That's where we kind of face the tough things out of those moments. And I just think in pastoral ministry, it is charged. There's a changing landscape. It is different today. But at the same time, it's our connection with Jesus that will answer to those moments, not to diminish anybody's circumstances or to downplay challenges, but at the same time, his grace is sufficient. And if we've not been in his presence, we will succumb to the pressure.
Well, you've certainly lived a life that where you have always been able to reach out and have somebody around you when you've needed it, but also been there for others. I have another, just one more question here. So, hey, we're having coffee at a leadership conference. As a pastor, how important was it for you to show up at leadership events? Mm-hmm. And how important was it for you to bring other people to leadership events?
Yeah. I mean, there's no shortage of options. I mean, there's content everywhere. There's conferences galore. For me, even though I participated and attended things outside of Foursquare, I always prioritized our fall leadership conference, and I always prioritized our annual convention. To me, it wasn't even a non-negotiable, you know, because one, I always wanted to feel like I was part of the family. I always wanted to bring my contribution. I didn't want to marginalize the sovereign sense of placement that I experienced. So when the family gathers, I gather. You know, it's just kind of like in our churches, we wonder why don't you gather when we're gathering together, and you miss people when they're not there. And it's kind of like, I don't know, maybe sometimes we underestimate our contribution and our presence because we're missed when we're not there. Yeah. And so I also wanted our team to get to know who we are as a Foursquare family. I didn't want to be the sole arbiter of their experience in Foursquare. I wanted them to experience Foursquare. Even if with convention, we would bring our church councils. We would bring leaders in the church to be a part and to experience. It gave them a broader picture of what Foursquare was. And it actually helped when it came to issues of like the district tithe and missions giving and things like that, when they saw kind of this bigger picture that we're part of something bigger than ourselves. It really became less of something that had to be processed and talked about in a council level or at a leadership level, because it was a joyful extension of who we were in ministry. Cool. And so I just know any relationship will not flourish when you see it as transactional. It's not going to flourish when you say, what do I get out of this? Relationships flourish when we give. And it's in the giving, though, that we always receive. And I just found that to be true even in my Foursquare relationships, that the more I gave, the more I received.
And finally, why do we drink coffee without lids?
It's because... You taught me this. I used to mock you for it. Like, you're almost paranoid about it, though. Yeah.
It's because of all the people that say coffee smells good, but I don't like the taste. So for those of us that like the taste, why would you ever block the smell? So here we are.
Thus saith Ted Vail. Tepid, lukewarm coffee.
Thank you.
Yeah.